Hello, everybody. Bill Buckmaster along with my buddy John Couch, John engineering and producing the show, and together a big welcome to everybody on this Tuesday, October the 13th, 2020, bringing Southern Arizonans together on the radio right here in the Green Thing Zocalo Village Studio on 1030 Tucson's Voice for trusted news talk. We have our worldwide live listening. That's at buckmastershow.com, and you can listen live. And then, of course, there's the podcast. We have a extensive archive coming up on a 10-year anniversary of this program in January. So there's a lot of programs in the library. The Buckmaster Show Live Line is presented by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management. Today we resume our every other month interview series presented by Pima Community College. This series introduces our listeners to the talented and dedicated educators and supporters of Pima Community College. Joining us on the live line, Damian Klenko. Damian is chairman of the five-member Pima Community College Governing Board. Damian, how are you?
I'm excellent, Bill. Thank you so much for having me on this morning.
Well, it's my pleasure. I want to talk about a very important proposition that is on the November ballot, and folks are filling out their ballots. I know we got ours over the weekend and quickly filled out our ballot, and one of the areas that was a big yes was the proposition that pertains to Pima Community College. It's 481. Damon, what is this initiative all about?
Yeah, so Prop 481 is a expenditure limit reset, which allows the college to spend more of the revenue that we bring in through taxes. So in 1978-79, legislation was passed statewide that capped how much of the tax dollars being brought into community college districts could be spent for operations. Anything above that limit could be spent on long-term debt, on construction, on leasing things. But everything below limited the amount we could spend, and it was based on a formula using student enrollment as part of that baseline. Well, over the last 40 years, it's good to remember that was created the year I was born. So when you compound that out to today, Pima College is actually at a significant disadvantage versus the other community college statewide. That particular year, the college had a very conservative budget. And because those were the budget numbers that were used in the baseline, today, Pima College can spend, because of that expenditure, about $3,000 less than the other community colleges in Arizona. And that's the average. So when you average all the others together, we're at a $3,000 per student spending disadvantage. So a yes vote on Prop 481 recalculates that expenditure limit calculation, and it allows us to spend tax dollars we're already bringing in. So instead of taking on long-term debt, we're able to put that money into the classrooms. I think the other important thing to remember is that the college is a very different institution than it was 40 years ago. Today, we have a lot of high-tech programs, aviation, nursing, advanced automotive, advanced manufacturing, and all of these programs cost a lot more per student to operate. And so this, again, provides the resources to really ramp up programs and connect with the centers of excellent investment that we're making. We can talk a little bit more about that.
Yeah, I mean, in that editorial in the Arizona Daily Star Sunday, the Star, and I'm glad they did this, they said, please vote yes on 481. They said that there hadn't been a change in this expenditure since the show Dallas was on the air, the Dukes of Hazzard, and MASH were in the television top 10. So it's been a long time coming that this change is really necessary.
100%. You know, the college over the last few years, we have taken on this new strategic vision for the institution to create centers of excellence. And these are high performing, best in class programs in our region that tie directly to the industry that's here in Pima County. And the investment into those programs means new facilities, state of the art equipment. But we do need the resources to be able to ramp up those programs and make sure that connected to those infrastructure improvements are the payroll and the best instructors that we can hire to deliver the promise to our community. So that's another thing the expenditure limit does. I would also note that the college has been impacted by COVID, like institutions all throughout the country. Pima College has seen a decline in enrollment over last semester by about 15%. And as our enrollment goes down, we will be forced, if this expenditure limit reset isn't passed, to really redesign our employment. We'll have to make cuts. We'll have to make significant changes. And as part of the economic recovery, we won't be in a position to be able to be as robust. If by passing this, we're providing the resources to the college to sort of bridge the current moment, so that as we ramp up and really serve the entire region as an economic development tool for people to get reskilled, retrained, reeducated into the new workforce, we have the employees, we have the incredible instructors and staff and faculty ready to go. But we don't want to lose that and be at a disadvantage as the recovery comes.
Prop 481 would increase the base limit component of the formula calculation to about average, I believe, Damian Klinko, there of the state's 10 community college base limits. So this isn't even with the yes vote, this is not going to push us to the top.
Yeah, so currently we are at the lowest, and this just takes us to the average. We felt that parity was important. It's also worth noting that this proposal was referred to the ballot with an affirmative vote by all five members of the Pima Community College Governing Board. And I think that really reflects the responsibility to the taxpayers, that we didn't want to be really aggressive and be outside of the normal, but really taking the statewide average. And it just moves us into that average to be able to serve the people of Pima County. And don't we deserve the same quality of investment into our higher education system that all of the other community colleges in the state are the beneficiary of currently?
So if we factor in inflation, Pima Community College base limit in 2020 dollars is now almost $3,300 lower than the average of the nine other community colleges in this state.
So students at Pima, the college can spend $3,000 less per student.
Wow.
Than on average of the other community colleges.
That's pretty dramatic.
It is pretty dramatic, and it's particularly dramatic when you take into consideration that in 2015, the state legislature took away all state funding from both Pima Community College and Maricopa Community College. So the two urban colleges in the state received no state funding, and although we have received state funding for specific projects, in the baseline, we don't get general funds from the state. So traditionally, the community college systems were sort of a three-leg stool. There was the tax base that we collect from the property owners of Pima County. There was state funding provided to our operational funds and tuition. And when state funding went away because of the expenditure limit, we've had to put the expense on to students. So tuition has had to go up year after year to keep pace with the operational costs of the institution, while we've been making significant reductions over the last 5 years. So, we've done a really good job of balancing the budget, but this really will provide us the flexibility to be there, not just now, in the future, and as part of the economic recovery that's coming.
And a reminder to folks, when you're filling out your ballot, this proposition is on the other side of the ballot. Some people they look at the front side and they fill it out and they say, oh, okay, I'm done. No, turn it over and check the back.
There are three propositions on the back. We're the last one, 481. When you fill out your ballot, be sure to sign the white envelope, put your daytime phone, date it, and then put it into the yellow envelope and either take it down to the Pima County Recorders or drop it in the mail.
Do you have a pretty good feeling about this? I do. I think this is going to pass.
I haven't heard any arguments in opposition. I think that we as a community recognize the importance of having post K through 12 educational options. And I'm really proud of the work that Pima Community College, under the leadership of Chancellor Lambert, has done over the last 6 years in really transforming the institution to respond to the economic needs of our community. You know, we are aligned with the economic sectors that are based in Pima County. Those are the programs we're investing in because that's where we'll have the highest bang for our buck. We want to assure that when students graduate, they have livable wage jobs and have careers that serve them and their families, not just today, but into the future, and that they can come back to Pima College for reskilling, for upskilling, as these industries and these technologies continue to evolve and accelerate in the world that we're living in.
Thank you, Damian Klinko, talking about Proposition 481. Damian, thank you, sir.
Yep, thank you very much, Bill. Have a great afternoon.
You too. Damian Klinko is the chairman of the 5-member Pima Community College Governing Board. For more information about Pima Community College, visit pima.edu. It's the Buckmaster Show in the Green Things Zocalo Village Studios. Our live line is presented by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management. Shelley Fishman is with me in studio for his Tuesday Moneymaker Report, and Shelley's going to give me a thumbs down, but we'll find out what's going on with the market. This market could change after the commercial break. We'll be right back. Probably will.
Vero Amore Restaurant in Plaza Palomino at Fort Lowland Swan and Dove Mountain in Marana are now open for limited in-restaurant and patio dining, along with takeout and home delivery. All of your favorite Vero Amore menu items, including Tucson's only certified authentic Neapolitan wood-fired pizza, are ready for you and your friends and family. More at VeroAmorePizza.com. A Citizens Advisory Committee of the Regional Transportation Authority is in the process of developing a new 20-year regional transportation plan, and soon will consider which projects best address transportation needs across the greater Tucson region. As part of its ongoing public outreach, the RTA invites your early input on which projects meet regional goals. Learn more about plan development and provide input at rtanext.com.
The Arizona mining industry provides precious metals needed to support technical and structural equipment used by law enforcement, firefighters, and the military to keep us safe here and around the world. But the most critical part of public safety and national security is the people who serve without hesitation to protect us. The Southern Arizona Business Coalition stands with our men and women who serve with respect, responsibility, integrity, and discipline daily to keep us safe.
Vets working hard to save wildlife covered in cactus spines. A skunk left for dead, miraculously saved by a caring citizen. Those are just a couple of the headlines from the nonprofit Tucson Animal Rescue Center, where thousands of animals are cared for each year at its state-of-the-art Far East Side Tucson facility. Rescue, rehab, and release. The Tucson Wildlife Center, saving wildlife for more than two decades. Donate online at TucsonWildlife.com or call 290-WILD.
The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun cover two of Arizona's most desirable communities. The newspapers reach more than 75% of the communities each week, with a combined population of more than 50,000. The Green Valley News also publishes a dozen magazines each year, and both newspapers publish up-to-the-minute local news online at gvnews.com. The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun, it's all right here.
As a small business owner, I appreciate the services of a top-notch certified public accountant. That's why Michael C. Flowers of Flowers, Rieger & Associates is the CPA firm of the Buckmaster Show. Michael's a former Small Business Leader of the Year in Tucson. He'll professionally handle all of your accounting needs and tax preparation services. Flowers, Rieger & Associates, 6125 East Grant Road, and on the web, flowersrieger.com. Welcome back to the Buckmaster Show. I want to tell you about Mona's Danish Bakery, our favorite place. for bakery goods in the Tucson area. Of course, Mona's, home of the Danish Kringle, located at the northeast corner of Swan and Sunrise. Mona's is open for breakfast. They're open right now for lunch. They open the doors at 6:30 in the morning, close at 2, and of course, you can treat yourself to those mouth-watering pastries. Call ahead, check out online, any way you want to do it. A limited indoor dining, but there's plenty of room outside on the patio. There's a link to Mona's at buckmastershow.com, and of course you can go to the monasdanishbakery.com. Be right back.
Shelley Fishman is a financial consultant in private practice in Tucson, Arizona. The views expressed during this segment are his own and don't necessarily represent those of this station or of Bill Buckmaster Communications. Contact Shelley through buckmastershow.com or at shelleyfishman.com.
And here he is, Shelley Fishman. Shelley, how's your week going?
So far, not too bad, Bill. And Tuesdays is Tuesdays, and so what we're seeing is Dow Industrial Average down about 150 points with no particular reason why. Nevertheless, it was up for the past couple of days. The Dow is very close to its all-time highs.
If people have been watching the confirmation hearings in the Senate, they are hearing the words healthcare a lot.
Yeah, so this is a really great day to talk about healthcare, because as of the tomorrow, actually, today's the 13th. So as of the 15th of October, open enrollment period starts for Medicare, and it extends through December 7th. So this stuff is very, very complex, and every individual might have somewhat different ways of needing to enroll for Medicare, and some of the alternatives like Medicare Advantage or supplements, but just on its kind of most broad-based dates and calendar, you can enroll in Medicare from 3 months before your 65th birthday to 3 months after. And that's an open enrollment for you, and you must do it. You should not ignore it. There are two parts of Medicare, Part A and Part B, and the Part A is kind of automatic. The Part B is going to be taken out of your Social Security payments when you start taking Social Security, which, of course, can be as late as age 70. The open enrollment period for Medicare that starts day after tomorrow and goes through December is for making changes to the plan you're already on. And that says that there's no ability for these plans to turn you down. If you do it within the open enrollment period, there may be specific exceptions in your case. So again, talk to a professional, health insurance provider. Don't listen to one. Get three opinions.
Because one size does not fit all.
Well, and every licensed healthcare broker is married to one or two or three companies and has their own way of wanting to present what they do. So you get some people who sell health insurance who are specifically kind of geared to the older community and Medicare and Medicaid. You have some who are really only interested in selling private insurance. So you should really talk to somebody either you've known for a while and trust, or as importantly, get a couple of opinions. A lot of ads on TV right now, you call any of those people and you're going to get the licensed practitioner for their company. Mm-hmm. And they're going to be selling the heck out of whatever it is they have to sell. You should also know that the general enrollment period starts in January 1st for most people and goes through March 31st. And Medicare Advantage, which is something that everybody on Medicare should at least look into. It's not right for everybody, but everybody should look into it and understand what it is, starts again January 1st and ends on March 31st.
One of the big questions that's coming out of these hearings, some people are worried, probably a lot of people, about their health care. What's going to happen with the confirmation of Coney Barrett?
And the likelihood is she's going to be confirmed, going to be the new Supreme Court Justice. Mm-hmm. So let's talk about specifically the case that's coming before the Supreme Court on November 10th. On November 10th, the court will hear a case, and I believe its formal name is Texas versus California. The appeals court in Texas essentially said that Obamacare, as it was revised after Justice Roberts said it was it could be made constitutional by taking the requirement that everybody pay something if they don't have insurance, taking that away, the appeals court in Texas said that makes the whole law unconstitutional. Now, you know, depending upon who you talk to, they'll say that's either, you know, full of nonsense or absolutely, you know, should be what the Supreme Court decides. So on the 10th, the Supreme Court will hear arguments both in favor of and against making the remaining pieces of Obamacare either constitutional or not. Now, let's remember what the Supreme Court normally does in cases like this. They'll hear an important case and then agree to decide on it into the next year.
Typically
in March,
spring,
April,
right,
May,
yeah.
In the spring.
Yeah.
So the likelihood that on the 11th of November, Obamacare will go away is, given the way the Supreme Court normally operates, is probably not a high likelihood. Though if you listen to the people who are very alarmed about what might happen with a Justice Coney Barrett, you get the feeling that this whole thing can come tumbling down in November, and that's not likely. However, the question then becomes, what would happen? How would the judges, if they decided to go and cancel Obamacare, what would happen to the ACA and people who have policies under the ACA or people who are covered by Medicaid in states that expanded Medicaid using the ACA's funding provisions? What will happen to them? Mm. Most independent insurance policies, that is, policies that are not provided by your employer, are one-year contracts. Which means that a year from the day you sign up, you have the option as the insured person to continue on a month-to-month basis for a year. You can't be canceled by the insurance company. The likelihood is that any policies bought on the exchanges through Obamacare, if you will, that those policies would be found by the Supreme Court to be justified and would continue for the length of that 1 year.
Mm-hmm.
And that could be a month from today. It could be mm-hmm. 11 months from mm-hmm. today, depending upon when you signed up. So, and I don't know that this is the way it would happen, but it seems to me probable that what the justices would do in overturning Obamacare would be to stay their own decision based upon the existing contracts and simply say that no additional contracts would be allowed. Now, that's still going to throw things into turmoil.
Sure.
Right? Make no mistake about it. But for people who think, oh, my God, I'm going to lose my insurance tomorrow.
Yeah, it's not going to happen.
That's probably not going to happen.
Yeah.
Now, let's say in the case that the case, you know, if Trump wins or if Trump holds or the Republicans hold on to the Senate, it's very unlikely that Congress will be able to do anything to fix Obamacare consistent with what the Supreme Court might say. If, on the other hand, we get a President Biden and a Democratic Senate, then there's a likelihood, regardless of what the Supreme Court does, that would give our our congressional system, our lawmaking bodies, the ability to fix what the Supreme Court says is wrong, get it passed both houses of Congress, and send it on to the president, who would then sign it. And my guess, again, this is just a guess, Bill, would be there would be some effort to ensure continuity in what they do. Now, again, that's why this election is so very, very important for the 20 or 25 million people or so who are either covered through Obamacare or rely on what happens through Obamacare or their continuing insurance. At this point, there are no Republican-offered fixes. They say they've got some in their back pockets, but we haven't seen any.
All right. So
absent those, it's really hard to know.
Shelley, a week from today, I'm going to be heading for the high country, look for some autumn color and maybe cooler air. Hope perhaps 20 degrees cooler where we're headed. Over to the high country of New Mexico. You'll be sitting in this chair. You have a very interesting hour planned.
Yeah, we've got one guest for the entire hour, and his name is Jonathan Rothschild.
Yep.
And I will call him Mr. Mayor
or
Mr. Former Mayor or His Honor, as we used to call the mayor in New York. And we're going to talk about a lot of things. We're going to talk about what he's doing now. We're going to talk about, you and I, Bill, have spent a bunch of time talking about how corporations regard stakeholders, and one of those stakeholders is the community. One of the things that Jonathan and I are going to talk about is how he was successful in his 8 years as mayor in ensuring that the corporations that he attracted to this city were conscious of their community responsibilities.
Right.
And how he was able to do that and still attract. Look, this city looks so different today than it did 8 years ago. And a lot of that is because of what Jonathan did in his ability to attract businesses and then hold businesses accountable for the way they affected the environment, et cetera. So I'm really looking forward to it.
All right.
And really like the opportunity of having
one full hour with
Jonathan Rothschild.
There you go. Thank you, Shelley. Have a great week.
Noble Hops in Oro Valley is now open to welcome guests for limited in-restaurant and patio dining, along with takeout and home delivery. All of your favorite Noble Hops menu items are available for you, your family, and friends. So check out Noble Hops, a pub for foodies, on West Lambert Lane at North La Cañada Drive in Oro Valley, and on the web at noblehopspub.com.
The Arizona mining industry provides precious metals needed to support technical and structural equipment used by law enforcement, firefighters, and the military to keep us safe here and around the world. But the most critical part of public safety and national security is the people who serve without hesitation to protect us. The Southern Arizona Business Coalition stands with our men and women who serve with respect, responsibility, integrity, and discipline daily to keep us safe.
Are you happy with the news you get? While not all news is good news, you know good reporting when you see it. Check TucsonSentinel.com every day for breaking news and investigative reports. Have your say in the comments. It's all in TucsonSentinel.com, your local, independent, nonprofit news. You can rely on TucsonSentinel.com for solid reporting about immigration, Tucson and Pima politics, everything from the border to baseball. It's independent news without the spin. TucsonSentinel.com. We are watching Tucson.
The Friends of Pima Animal Care Center is the nonprofit partner to our Pima County Animal Shelter. We grant critically needed resources to PACC so that it can continue the amazing life-saving progress it has made in recent years. Your generosity helps us find homes for abused, neglected, and abandoned animals at PAC. Learn how you can help at friendsofpacc.org.
Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing is once again welcoming guests to the gallery. Stop by or call ahead for a one-on-one appointment or even a virtual design session. Come by Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing, located at the southwest corner of Fort Lowell and Dodge. The number is 795-8226 and on the web at moesgallery.com.
The average person in the USA today takes over 12 prescription medicines each year, and if you are over age 65, it is more than 17 medicines. CredibleMeds.org is a nonprofit organization dedicated to helping inform you and your healthcare providers. Over 30,000 people die each year from reactions to their medicines. Don't be one of those numbers. Be informed and stay safe. Visit CredibleMeds.org today and take control of your healthcare by taking your medicines safely.
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show in the Green Things Zocalo Village Studios. Green Things, boy, they're already getting ready for Christmas, the poinsettias. They've got a couple of warehouses. They grow their own over there, thousands of them. So it's getting to be the holiday season, even though the weather might not reflect it. But one thing, the weather is reflecting cool mornings, so the plants really are enjoying that part of the day. And if you're looking for some color for the backyard, now would be a good time to make that run over to Green Things, 3384 East River Road by the Rito River. They're just west of the Brandy Fenton Park. It's a beautiful site, 13 acres, not only home to everything green, but also Zocalo Village and all that great merchandise, much of it hand-carved from Mexico and Latin America. GreenThingsAZ.com and ZocaloVillage.com. It's time for our 2020 Your Vote, Your Voice candidate interview series. All of our candidate interviews are archived at KVOI.com. Let's go now on the live line presented by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management to candidate Deborah McEwen. Deborah is one of three candidates. There's two Democrats and one Republican. She is the lone Republican in the race for the Arizona House of Representatives in District Number 2. Deborah, how are you?
I'm really fine, Bill. It's great to be on your show. Thank you.
Well, tell me a little bit about yourself. Let our listeners know who you are and why you are running, Deborah.
Sure. I have a background in criminal justice and been a forensic scientist and a manager and an assessor of laboratories for about 32 years. And I did a lot of law enforcement training and testified in court and also trained lawyers and law enforcement at the Law Enforcement Academy. So I've been in government criminal justice work for many years. And thought I would get interested, more active, I should say, in politics. So last year, I decided to run for an office. And hopefully, I'll be able to bring all that experience and knowledge up to Phoenix and make an impact there with any policies and bills that they have to get through. And that's what my hopes are.
Why is a conservative voice necessary and needed in District 2, Deborah McEwen?
We have been in a liberal voice down here for quite a while. We've had the three Democrats that held the office seats of representative and senator have been down here from anywhere from 12 to 8 years, rotating seats around, and I think it's time for a change. We've seen a lot of low scholastic scores, and we have a suffering economy down here as far as getting our young people out of high school and into those community colleges and being trained in technical jobs that they could make a good living at. And I'm just not seeing that push down here, and I would like to open that up a little bit and offer some more opportunities with more technical trade skills and boost the economy down here. I think it's not that that's a liberal or conservative thought, but economy is necessary all the way around with education, family life, giving people a good, healthy base for their future. And I think the best way to do that is education and economic opportunities.
District 2, give us a general idea what the borders of that district entail.
Well, District 2 is quite a large area. It starts down at the Mexican border in Santa Cruz County, and it encompasses all of that county. And then it creeps up into Pima County through the I-19 corridor into South Tucson. And it goes up to about 22nd Street in Tucson. So that whole southern district is part of my area. And as you probably well know, there's a lot of school issues up there that probably need to be taken a look at to see how we can improve that situation there. And the other areas of my district go all the way over to Arivaca, which has a large veterans population, and also to the east is Sonoyta, wine country, tourism, and lots of outdoor recreation and activities.
Your platform, how are you getting the word out other than occasional interviews on the radio? This is a very difficult time to be campaigning. How are you approaching it, Deborah McEwen?
Well, I'm playing it safe like everyone is, but I do get out to a lot of meetings and speaking events. So I am able to reach the people one-on-one and find out what their issues and needs are. So that's still happening.
And what are you hearing as far as their issues and needs? You brought up the economy. What else?
The economy and education seem to be the big ones. And then after that, people are looking mainly at safety and security and health care. So those seem to be the popular ones right now. A lot of people worried about the COVID situation and when they're going to be able to get back opening their businesses full speed and getting those paychecks more stabilized. So that seems to be the big issue right now.
Are you all in favor of opening up this state as soon as possible, Deborah McEwen?
Yes, I think it's a good idea to let the business owners decide how to best open up full steam ahead or at half capacity. I think we should let them decide that. They are going above and beyond what they regularly need to do with the health codes and cleaning and health regulations. And if every one of their customers is also being safe and secure, I see no reason why they can't be operating in a full capacity and start, you know, generating their income again and thus paying taxes. And, you know, it just keeps the ball rolling with the whole economy. So there are also pockets of Arizona, like the rural areas, where COVID is not affecting people as much. And those places need to be able to be open and, keep up with the economy in their regional areas. And, of course, in the more compact areas like Tucson, you are going to have to probably be more careful. But our business owners are smart and they're safe. And I think with a little backbone and support with protecting them from liability issues, from frivolous lawsuits, I think it's time to open them back up.
All right, Deborah McEwen, where can people find out more about your campaign?
They can go to my webpage at McEwen4AZ.com, McEwen4AZ.com.
Deborah McEwen, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Deborah McEwen is one of three candidates for two seats representing District 2. There are two Democrats, and she is the lone Republican. And again, that's vote for two out of the three candidates. All of our interviews are archived for you at KVOI.com. Have it kind of a clearinghouse of all of our interviews from our three local daily talk shows. So I think we've really got a broad representation of pretty much all of the candidates for the major races at KVOI.com. All of our interviews, really, since we started talking to candidates back in January on Election Day, 3 weeks from today. It's the Buckmaster Show, Tuesday edition. We'll be back in about 4 or 5 minutes with Margaret Regan, longtime arts writer for the Tucson Weekly.
Here at Bon Voyage Travel, we encourage you to keep the travel spark alive by exploring the world through our weekly webinar series that includes inspiration and insight from some of the top leaders in the travel industry. When you're ready to plan your next adventure, know that Bon Voyage Travel will be here to advise and assist. Join us every Wednesday at 3 p.m. for a new virtual destination discovery. While we're apart, let's keep dreaming together. Visit bvtravel.com for more information.
Green Things is a family-owned and operated plant nursery serving Tucson since 1970. Open daily at 3384 East River Road, Green Things is chock full of plants and pottery from around the world. Green Things is also now home to Zocalo, featuring fine Mexican and South American imports spread over five buildings on the 13-acre Green Things property. For more, visit greenthingsaz.com and zocalovillage.com.
Cushman & Wakefield PICOR is Tucson's leading independently owned full-service commercial real estate company. Founded in 1985, Cushman & Wakefield PICOR offers leasing, sales, and property management for industrial, office, medical, retail, land, and investment properties in Tucson and Sonora, Mexico. Visit our website at PICOR.com for the latest news from Tucson's commercial real estate sector. That's PICOR.com. Call us at 748-7100.
Hi, this is Pam Krim, CEO of the Better Business Bureau of Southern Arizona, where we set the standards for marketplace trust by engaging with and educating consumers and businesses. The BBB is the place to turn for objective and unbiased information on businesses. Learn more about the many services offered by the Better Business Bureau of Southern Arizona at bbb.org/Tucson.
The Regional Transportation Authority Plan is funded by a voter-approved half-cent sales tax, which expires in June 2026. In preparation for developing a new 20-year regional transportation plan, the RTA Board established a Citizens Advisory Committee to select projects for the draft plan. The committee will help identify which projects to invest in to best meet regional transportation needs. Learn more about plan development and provide early input at rtanext.com.
Family-owned Jam Culinary Concepts and its family of restaurants has you covered for your special event. Jam caters anytime, anywhere, any size group, and any type of cuisine. Vero Amore, authentic Neapolitan pizza, and Noble Hops. Craft beer and fine fare are synonymous with quality. Call 954-1468 or log on to jamculinaryconcepts.com.
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show in the Green Things Zocalo Village Studios. This portion of the program presented by Silver City in Grant County, New Mexico. You know, it's only about a three-hour drive to a beautiful area of the Land of Enchantment, not too far from Tucson. Start planning right now by going to their website, southwestnewmexico.org, and you'll have all sorts of recreation ideas there at the website, and also some suggestions for great places to stay. It's southwestnewmexico.org. Joining us on the live line, and by the way, our live line presented by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management, Margaret Regan, celebrating 30 years writing about the arts for the Tucson Weekly. Margaret is the author of two prize-winning books on immigration. She's also been very involved with the Tucson Festival of Books. She was the artist writer in residence. Unfortunately, that term began right as COVID was beginning in March. So she really didn't get a chance to do much one-on-one counseling with prospective writers. Margaret, how are you?
I'm doing okay, Bill. Sometimes I'm getting a little worn out of the whole COVID thing, staying at home, but soldiering on.
So the Tucson Festival of Books will go virtual. That decision made a week or so ago. That's a it's a ways off, but still you can kind of figure where they're coming from. People may not want to be getting out in March. I hope they do, but they decided to go virtual.
Yeah, well, I think part of it is that they bring artists in or writers in from all over the country, and that's what got it started this time. You know, in this year, all these authors canceled, and, you know, because they're the ones who are going to have to fly on the planes and maybe get exposed. So I think it's probably for a good thing to decide it early on, because they are doing that whole nice suite of interviews with artists, and, you know, maybe that'll be a permanent thing, a part of our radioscape or our internetscape, that maybe always they'll have these nice interviews with the authors. So that's one good thing.
Yeah, that might be a nice component going forward of the Tucson Festival of Books. The Tucson Museum of Art is open now. They have limited hours. You do need to make reservations. And I understand, Margaret, they have decided to go ahead with the Arizona Biennial 2020.
Right, yeah, it's up and ready to be viewed. Yeah, I think the museum opened in late July, and they had another show that they were committed to towards the end of September. And the Arizona Biennial, which is every other year, it's a very competitive process. You know, Arizona artists only are allowed to apply. And a lot of people applied. Let me see, I have the number here. Let's see. 1,351
wow.
pieces. And some artists, you know, contributed more than one, but that's the number of pieces that the curator had to look at. And he got it down to 88. So very competitive to get into the show. So it's the kind of thing, you know, it celebrates Arizona. It celebrates a lot of local artists. And so the museum was just adamant that they weren't going to let it go by. But it did start 2 months later than usual. It was supposed to start at the beginning of July. But it's up and running, opened on October 1st, I think, and it's running till January 10th, so people have plenty of time. And as you said, you know, the museum is a big, sprawling space, and they're being very good about allowing only a certain number of people in at a time, and there's hand sanitizers everywhere, and you have to wear a mask. So I went down there, I braved it, alive to tell the tale. It was just so delightful for me as an art person to go and see things in person instead of online.
Yeah, I mean, the virtual has its place, but nothing can really, take away the experience of seeing that art up close and personal. Did you like what you saw generally?
Oh, I did, and I have a nice story about a young artist named Kareem Anthony Ferreira, who just graduated in the spring from the master's program in art at the U of A. He's really a good painter. And I had become aware of him because, you know, the MFA students get a chance to show like 8 pieces of their work to the public in a show at the end of the semester. And it's really important. Last year, a young painter got a painting sold to the Tucson Museum of Art. So it can really help, you know, a young painter's or young artist's career head forward. And so this guy that I'm writing about, he was going to do that, of course, like everybody else. And it was canceled. And so, you know, it turned into an online exhibition. And as I say in my article for the Weekly this week, I said I got my first look at this guy's epic works by squinting into my tiny laptop. And I felt bad for him, and of course the other ones. But then here I arrive a couple weeks ago at the Tucson Museum of Art, and here's one of his marvelous, gigantic paintings right at the entry of the show, you know, got pride of place. So I was delighted for him. Here was this guy. I thought, oh, what's going to happen to him now? And here he gets this wonderful space. Now, he has an interesting story. He's a young black artist born in Ontario, Canada, and he's from a family of people from Trinidad who immigrated to Canada. So there's all those people in his big extended family, and then there are the first-generation Canadians like him. And so he kind of dives into that dual cultural scene that he came up in. And the painting he has here, it's just wonderful. It's gigantic. You know, it's 11 feet long by 6 feet high.
Wow, that's a big one.
Yeah, and so but it's a painting of ordinary people. These are his relatives, a bunch of adults sitting in a park enjoying the sunshine, and a couple of little girls getting really antsy who just want to shoot themselves up and out into the world, you know. So it's ordinary people lionized by the size and the colors and everything he does for them. It makes them, I said in my article, as grand as any 19th century painting of kings and shipwrecked sailors, which is a big famous painting in France. So I was thrilled to see this, and this guy gets this exposure.
Yeah, it's kind of the centerpiece of the right as you come in for the Arizona Biennial, which is up through January 10th. Margaret, I've only got a couple of minutes. Let's go through MoCA, Tucson, Reopen. Let's go through some of these venues because people are starved for art events.
I know.
Yes.
Now, I haven't been there yet, but I believe they also opened October 1st. Mm-hmm. And they're being very nice. Their entry is free because they feel bad of having locked everybody out all the time. And they have a show very important for the moment. The temporary director who has now been, she's the curator. They have a new director. But the temporary director asked five artists from Tucson, which is great, to make works called Working from Home. What is it like to be an artist in the pandemic and staying away from all your friends and galleries and so on. So I'm really looking forward to seeing that.
And that's the Museum of Contemporary Art known as MoCA Tucson. Their hours Friday and Saturday, 12 to 7, Sunday, noon to 4 p.m. Mm-hmm. Hotel Congress reopened early in October.
Yeah. So yeah, I rooted around looking for musical things and, yeah, Hotel Congress, which, you know, had an up and down experience in the spring and the summer. They were closed, they were open, they were closed. Now they're open, you know, you have to stay outside. But they're hosting music every Tuesday night on the patio, and it's called Taco Tuesdays. So you can get a taco while you're there and enjoy the nice, sort of getting cooler evening air. And there's a show tonight. It's every Tuesday. So the show tonight is somebody called Don Armstrong and the Whiskey Palians.
Okay.
$8. You know, you can't beat it.
Loft Cinema, how are they fair? They haven't, like everybody else, they've had a tough time.
I know. And, you know, there's this funny thing you can do. You can rent the whole theater if you wish, or one of the screening rooms. I know somebody who did it. I think it's like $100 and some. You get your friends, limited number of people, and they show a movie that you would like. But one thing they're doing for a wider audience, they're calling it the outdoor loft or something. They have space behind the building, and it's like an every night thing, as far as I can tell from their website, of horror movies.
really
funny things, you know, that is kind of a nice thing for this time. So the audience members are seated far apart outside, and I caught the name of one of the movies. It's The Slumber Party Massacre.
Oh, boy, that sounds like a really a big thriller indeed.
Yeah, Friday night.
And so quickly, Monterey Court on West Miracle Mile, they're doing some outdoor music, and Gaslight Music Hall, drive-in concerts.
Yeah, and both of those venues that you mentioned are having music almost every night. I can't believe that
good.
They came back so well.
Very good.
Yeah, and the Monterey Court is an outdoor space in the first place, and the Gaslight thing is using their parking lot, and it's called drive-in concerts. A friend of mine's been going. You can stay in your car, just like a drive-in movie, or you can bring your little chair and sit in front of the car, but the cars are spaced apart. He said it's very well run, and it feels quite safe to go.
All right.
Shows every night.
Margaret Regan, always a pleasure. We'll look for your work in the Tucson Weekly. Thank you. Stay safe.
Thanks, Bill. You too.
All right. Margaret Regan of the Tucson Weekly. That's going to do it for the Buckmaster Show Tuesday edition in the books. It's always available at buckmastershow.com. All of our podcasts are up there. Thanks to John Couch for your work today on The Other Side of the Glass. Hope everybody has a great afternoon.